House Veterans Affairs Committee members are asking for more detail on why the Veterans Affairs Department let 14 contractor employees telework from countries like China and India. The latest VA Inspector General report on the agency's cybersecurity once again calls into question VA's actions and reactions to potential problems. In his biweekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, Executive Editor Jason Miller writes about these latest concerns. He joins me now to discuss them. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Those boys and girls at VA just can't seem to stay out of trouble when it comes to cyber.
It does feel that way sometimes, doesn't it?
What did the VAIG find out this time?
Well, this was one of the more interesting reports. Now, as you said, that the IG looked at from October 2011 to February 2014, they found at least 14 instances of contractors accessing VA's network and data from overseas. And again, these countries range from China to India to Costa Rica to Canada. So they are not just, you know, from one or the other. And the reason why the contractors received or accessing the data and the network is a combination of telework. They actually received permission from VA to telework from overseas, or they did it, you know, without proper authorization, but were on vacation or business travel. So nothing malicious per se going on. But the fact is that there was no policy set up from VA to say, can you or can't you access our network from overseas? And then, therefore, that caused confusion. And then, therefore, people did it, which then put VA and the data of millions of veterans at risk, according to the IG. Now, the other interesting part is the IG is pointing out that said even when the VA CIO, Steph Warren, found out that this was going on and said, stop it, you know, cease and desist, that message did not trickle down quickly enough to the troops at the you know, systems administrator level, and they let it go on for a few more months after that. And that also worried the VAIG that the reaction time was so slow. And then let me just add one more piece to the VA. What the VA found was an actual concern that there was, because there's no policy, they let it happen. There was no better judgment. No one stepped back and said, hey, do we really want someone coming in from our network from China, India, wherever? Does that really make a lot of sense? And then if we do think that's okay, how do we protect the network by giving them a plain computer, something that, you know, starts off wiped clean, you give it to them, they go to the country, they work, they bring it back, it gets wiped clean again, so there's no, you know, leftover malware and leftover ability for any of those countries to get inside the VA network.
All right, so all of this detail coming out from VA, the IG, and Steph Warren looked into it. What more do the members of Congress want on this?
Well, obviously, the House Veterans Affairs Committee has been really focusing on VA cybersecurity for the last 18, 20 months, almost 2 years now. And, you know, without a doubt, the VA and the CIO's office and the committee are at loggerheads over how much effort's being put in. I think the committee believes that the CIO's office could do more. So they've asked six questions, and we have all those six questions listed on federalnewsradio.com. But basically there's stuff like, does a policy exist that would deny connection from foreign countries? You know, does the Network Security Operations Center provide real-time monitoring of foreign connections? You know, does the Network Security Operations Center compare foreign connections to the network with users? So a lot of questions about how does VA manage the process, oversee the process, which I think all along over the last 2 years, Tom, that has been the major concern of the committee, is VA doing enough? And when they find out there are problems, and of course there will be problems, nobody's going to be perfect in cybersecurity, how fast are they reacting and fixing the problem? And I think a lot of times the committee believes VA is not reacting fast enough.
All right, so what does Steph Warren have to say about this?
Well, Warren, to his credit, recognized the problem. As soon as this came to light, that the people were accessing, contractors were accessing the network from overseas, he says, stop it. Let's fix it. But then he said, you know, let's put together a policy. And the question is from the committee, did that policy, you know, was it successful? Did it get put in place in time? And the concern is it didn't, because according to the IG, the VA created a policy in January 2014 prohibiting VA access to VA's network from what they call non-NATO countries, except for where VA has an established presence. But as you saw from the IG report, they had instances that this was still happening as of February 2014, so a month after the policy came out. Now, from the VA spokesman perspective, they say, obviously, you know, we take this protection of our network of veterans' data very seriously, and they are, you know, always looking at ways to improve it and training their workforce. And that's one thing they have done is reinvigorated their training around when is proper to be teleworking, what does it mean to be teleworking, and, you know, what does it mean to access your network from other places, whether it's in the U.S. or outside the U.S.
All right. Interesting report. Interesting reporting on it. And you can read Jason's full detailed story at federalnewsradio.com. And while we're on the subject of cybersecurity, Jason, you also report a lot of, or I guess a continuation of the many changes in cyber staff, especially at DHS.
The people on the move, it seems like it never ends. I mean, you usually get these ups and downs, but that last week there's this bunch of people decided to make decisions or get promoted or whichever. And let me start off with the Homeland Security Department. Now, Tom, we reported back in February that John Stryfert is retiring. We finally found out that his official retirement is going to be May 1st. Now, he's going to be replaced, at least on an interim basis, by Mark Neininger, who actually will be the acting director of the Federal Network Resilience Office. And once they find a permanent director, Mark will go back to being the deputy director, which was actually a promotion for him as well. What's interesting about John Stryfert, who's decided to retire after more than 25 years in government, is, you know, he really is credited with bringing this idea of continuous monitoring to the government. And it's a fairly big loss considering this program is still, you know, the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, the CDM program, is still in this infancy stage in many regards. But John is heading out to the private sector. I have, I'm still trying to confirm where he's going. I've heard it's a very interesting move in an academic sense. So once we kind of get that confirmed, we can report that. Now, as for Neininger, he's going to start his new job as deputy director and acting director after John leaves on May 1st and his deputy director job on April 20th. At the same time, over at the White House, they're losing their main person that oversees the federal cybersecurity effort. John Banghart, who works for the National Security Council, is actually leaving government as of May 15th. Now, he has been in government since 2009, and he's been over at the White House since August of 2013. It's not clear who's going to replace John, but if you remember that position of really overseeing federal cybersecurity, you know, this is the Trusted Internet Connection Initiative. This is the CDM program from the White House perspective. This is even the, you know, Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, the Smart Identity Card program. That position has seen a fair amount of turnover. If you remember Andy Osmond, who's now over at DHS, held that position. Then Earl Crane held it, and now John Banghart, and nobody there lasted more than 15, 18 months, give or take. So it's interesting to see who's going to move into that position and how that's going to, whether that has more turnover over the last few years of this administration.
Well, that job's job is to roll a great big boulder, and I guess if each person can move it an inch, that's about all you can get done sometimes in 18 months.
Well, what's interesting about that, Tom, is OMB had kind of ceded some of that oversight to the White House. I know they're one and the same to many people, but the eGov office had ceded some of that oversight to the White House, and then they've recently pulled it back. So it would be interesting to see if they even fill that role in the National Security Council office.
All right, and Jason, I also wanted to ask you about an RFP, or I guess an RFI, really, an RF request for information coming
Correct.
From GSA, looking for online authentication and credentialing, I guess a cloud-based solution for this. What are they looking for?
Well, this is the next step of the program called Connect.gov, and this is something, Tom, we've talked about, you've had people on your show about over the years, and this used to be called the Federal Cloud Credentialing Exchange, the FCCX or the F6. They changed the name to Connect.gov back last year. They launched it, the initial pilot around it with a couple agencies, including USDA and VA. They also launched it with about five different providers, PayPal, ID.me, Yahoo, Verizon, Google. And the idea behind this is, can you or me or any citizen take their credentials that they get from one of these providers and log on to government services and not have to get a new credential every single time and a more secure credential? So what GSA is looking for in this request for information is, what are some operating models for the future state of Connect.gov, and what would those operating models look like? They offer two examples, and we do have a link to that RFI on federalnewsradio.com. I'll go through it just real quick. One model is that GSA would operate what they call two broker contracts, one for the technical side that would provide the credential exchange platform, meaning, you know, it's exchanging from the third party to the government, And then a second contract would be for the business broker, would manage kind of the business relationship side. The second model would be a single contract that would do both of these things, technical and business broker. And that the question is, does that make sense? Would that work for the future of Connect.gov? So GSA is asking for industry input and other expertise.
And does any of what GSA is doing tie in with what NIST is doing through the NSTIC, the National Trusted Advisory, what is it, the National
Trusted Identities in Cyberspace.
Cyberspace, the NSTIC initiative.
Well, yes.
Because they've got pilots out and grants going to different pilot projects.
So they're definitely related. They're first cousins, if you will, maybe not brothers and sisters, in the sense that they're building off each other. Now, the NSTIC's pilots are mostly focused on the private sector. How do they provide some money, some input, some coordination among private sector? This Connect.gov and this RFI is really focused internally on the government and government services. So there's a huge connection, but they're not one and the same.
All right, and so what's their timeline at GSA? They've been walking and talking about this now for years.
Well, the pilot's up and running again among three agencies, five external credential providers, and GSA and the Postal Service are running kind of the back end piece. The RFI is due. The responses to the RFI are due June 19th, and GSA says it will hold an industry day sometime between now and June 19th. I would expect sometime in the May timeframe. From there, they'll go through the normal process. They'll look at the responses and decide how to move forward, whether an RFP is needed, more research is needed, and then something we'll have to wait and see. I think, they're still trying to test out Connect.gov, make sure it works, make sure it makes sense, make sure people are using it. So I don't think there's a rush to move from this initial pilot stage to initial operating capability or whatever you want to call it, the next step.
Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. As always, thanks for that report.
My pleasure.